Welcome to Keep Calm and Cook On. I'm your host, Julia Tertian. Each episode of Keep Calm and Cook On features a meaningful interview and answers to listeners' questions about cooking. Thanks for tuning in. This episode of Keep Calm and Cook On is presented by OXO. OXO makes some of the most thoughtfully engineered tools around. To find out more about OXO, head over to OXO.com. That's OXO.com. This week's episode is with Elle Simone Scott. You might know Elle from the PBS cooking show America's Test Kitchen, where she is a regular on-air contributor. You might know some of her other work without even realizing it. Elle has created beautiful food behind the scenes as a food stylist and culinary producer for the Food Network, The Cooking Channel, and Bravo. In 2013, she incorporated She Chef, a networking organization for women chefs of color. And much like Karen Akunowitz and LJ Johnson, who I spoke to on last week's episode, Elle's career began in social work, and we talk about the impact that's had on her work. We also talk about the sort of liminal time she's in right now and what it looks like to navigate burnout. I really appreciate Elle's honesty and openness about everything, but especially in talking about how she's continuing to build her life on her terms, while also figuring out exactly what those terms are. This conversation has stayed with me since I got to have it with Elle a couple of months ago at her home, and I am so grateful to share it with you now.
Will you introduce yourself?
Sure. Hi, I'm Elle Simone Scott. I'm from Detroit, Michigan. I'm a Brooklyn transplant right into Boston. I'm the founder of She Chef Incorporated, and I'm also TV talent for America's Test Kitchen.
You're all those things.
Yeah. I left out a few things just for the sake of time.
Can I ask you, you are so kind to have me in your home to have this conversation.
And of course.
It feels very good to be in this space, and my mom is here waving. And when we walked in, you were showing us some of your altars.
Yes.
And do you mind me asking you about this?
Absolutely not.
I feel like that's so cool to have these sort of dedicated moments to celebrating certain things. Have you always had that in homes you've been in?
I have, actually. Yeah. Some places I've lived have more space for larger altars. Uh-huh. I usually keep a pretty bountiful ancestor altar. But, you know, due to space here, I don't have that. But that is something that's very important to keep in every space that I live in or work in or spend a lot of time in.
Was that something like you grew up with or you've developed on your own?
I think to some degree, I probably always did it. You know, like I'm the keeper of things for my family, you know, so heirlooms. Mm-hmm. Obituaries, as morbid as that sounds,
no.
But you know, the family Bible with all birth dates, and I'm like the connector for my family.
Yeah.
So it is never unusual for me to have any type of like, you know, family historical paraphernalia somewhere. Now, would I always display it? No, you know, but I think the busier you get in life, the more important it is to kind of have these things visible for myself. You know, just as a remembrance, like I'm not doing it all for myself. I'm actually not even doing it all by myself, you know? And my altars kind of just keep me centered.
Yeah. Sort of stand on some shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's really cool. I like the one in particular that's the one to you of your younger self.
I
feel like that's really beautiful.
Thank you. I mean, that's something new, that I've kind of gotten into, like thinking about my little girl self and, you know, all that she went through and how she became me, or I am even still her, you know. You know, I experienced sexual assault as a child and, you know, like the kinds of things that I've seen break a lot of people, you know. So I think it's always important to honor little me, you know, because she is extremely resilient, you know, and probably more so than I am now as an adult, you know, having had so many life experiences.
Yeah.
But it's important to honor her. You know, she's a warrior.
Yeah, for
you know,
sure.
And just sweet and innocent, but also very decided about life. You know, like I was always a discoverer, you know. I loved books and museums, and I never traveled much as a child, but my mother always made sure that I had the kinds of experiences that allowed me to see the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so little me has always been curious, and I think that curiosity should never die.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. That's a tattoo.
Right?
Curiosity should never die. Right? Did you, as a kid, in this sort of like exploration through books and museums and stuff, was food a part of that then?
I would say yes. You know, my mom always took me to places that had like unique experiences. You know, like I grew up going to the Renaissance Festival every summer.
Wow.
And like, you know, so there's always all
like
kinds
dressed
of,
up.
Sometimes we yeah. would dress, you know, we would get, you know, believe it or not, my wardrobe probably consisted of something that could fit in medieval times because my mom is like super into historical things. So, you know, sometimes we would dress, we would get headdresses and just like spend the day there. I mean, I could literally put myself into that era, you know, like I've always even considered myself like a time traveler.
Uh-huh.
I'm very sure that this is not my first time at yeah. the rodeo.
Yeah.
Maybe this rodeo, you know.
You have any sense of where you've been?
I definitely have felt that I have had some experience in the island of Barbados in another life. Also here, Salem, I think I've had some experience there. I just found out maybe the past couple of years that my paternal grandmother was very witchy, you know. And I've always known that I've had, you know, some different things about me that uh-huh. I don't talk about,
yeah.
you know, for fear that people would look at me crazy. But,
I mean, we're all crazy.
Right, but yeah. it is what it is. You know, it's like, you know, I know that, you know, coming from that type of lineage, it didn't just happen this first yeah. time around. I definitely have been here learning some of these things before.
Yeah. It's interesting to me to hear you say that because I feel like one of the last times we spoke, we were talking a lot about networking.
Yeah.
And like how important connection is to you. So to me, it's the same conversation. It's just feeling very connected.
Very connected,
maybe
absolutely.
To people who aren't here right now. But
yep.
Yeah.
I definitely have a strong connection to ancestors and the gifts that they leave behind. Mm-hmm. You know, because every person who would consider themselves African-American, we're all like the result of the transatlantic slave trade, you know. And if we're here, that means we are the result of some people who survived it.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of resilience, like, you know, slavery historically was like the largest atrocity to human beings, right? If you are here, that means someone survived
mm-hmm.
the worst of the worst. And that requires like the most strength ever. And, you know, if you don't feel connected to that, it's easy to feel lost.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's important for me to keep that connection and, you know, use the gifts that have come with that, you know, discernment, you know, feeling free to say and think and feel how you want. Feeling free is like a big deal. There are people who are absolutely free and feel completely bond, you know, and feel like they're in complete bondage,
mm-hmm.
you know.
And you feel free.
Absolutely.
Have you always? Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I joke sometimes about how I come from one of the stranger kind of black families where my family, if someone told you no, you could ask why.
Mm.
That's not common.
Yeah.
Usually no is the no is no,
yeah.
right? But we could ask why. And if there was time or energy, we would get an explanation. You know, my friends would be like, I would never ask why to them. And I was like talking back. But in my family, we were always free to ask deeper questions. You know, it's not going to change the answer or the result, but I'm willing to let you know why, you know. And because if they didn't tell us why, we would still be too curious to follow the directive of no, you know. And my grandmother would always say, like, I would rather tell you the truth, why I think it's a bad idea. Now, if you still do it, then you want to learn another lesson. But you should know why no is no.
Yeah.
And so I've always felt free to ask,
wow.
well, why?
That's really powerful.
Yeah.
And it's like a simple question, but.
Simple.
And if you are always really curious as
yes.
a kid, as you described, what a gift to be able to ask
yes.
that. And
yes.
for someone to sit and tell you.
Because I was curious, okay? You hear me? I was an only child, you
what
know?
What were you curious about? Like, what were you asking about in general?
Oh, man. I grew up religious, mm-hmm. you know? I'm not, like, a strict, devout religious family, but definitely religious, Seventh-day Adventist. And, you know, if you grew up in that religion, then you know that all the conversation is about when Jesus returns, you
mm-hmm.
know? And it's like, you spend your whole life waiting for that day, you know, every single thing. I had a high school teacher who was my mentor, and we're still very close. She used to tell us in the ninth grade, you'll be lucky if you have graduation. Jesus will probably come before then. Now, I graduated from high school in 1994. So from 1990 to 1994.
He didn't show up.
He didn't show up. You know, and we're just kind of like, so, you know, so that becomes a thing. It becomes ingrained. Like, well, what do we do when he shows up? Will we know where to go? And where are these people who are going to raise up from the grave? Will we need to be next to the graveyard to see them? How will, you know.
It's like logistics.
Logistics, yeah, you know. And even with the religion, it's kind of like there's a one of the prophets that we study is Ellen G. White, right? And Ellen G. White talks, I mean, the book collection of this woman is massive. She was writing in like the 1800s, one of the founding mothers of the religion. And her books talk about women wearing pants, women not holding leadership positions in the church. I mean, very, you know, it has a very evident, you know, patriarchal stance on women in religion, you know, and it's like, I can't reconcile that alone. I need someone to explain it to me. And unfortunately, no one has ever been able to, you know, so... Of course, that kind of guided my direction as it relates to spirituality and religion. But growing up in that way with these rules under, you know, these premises with this doctrine and this literature, I just had a million
questions.
So many questions.
What are you curious about now?
You know, to be perfectly honest, I am finding that I'm not extremely curious about anything right now. I'm a little bored, you know, just like...
Have you ever felt that before? Or is that
not
new
in
to you?
A very long time. It is really new to me. Yeah. Like, I don't believe adults should be bored. Like, there's just too much shit to do in this world for anyone to be bored. I think at this point, if I'm really curious about anything, it's probably about where am I headed? Mm-hmm. What do I want to do next with my life, you know? Or, you know, also without, like, trying to plan it out to the T, because I also don't like to do that. So just like curious about what my next stage of life looks like, you know, professionally, personally.
Yeah. Do you have any sense of that, or you're kind of in the just sitting with it, figuring it out mode?
I mean, of course I have my dreams, you know, like I've always wanted to be creating content about women and food of the diaspora and food rituals, traditions. That's the kind of stuff I would really like to be focusing on. Creating either some type of digital content, podcast, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But that has been my goal, my dream work since at least 2013.
Yeah.
You know, and like, how do I go about doing it? You know, like I work with an amazing company. I'm with America's Test Kitchen, you know. You know, but I'm also a culinary producer, you know, like, how do I want to go about pursuing these goals? That's kind of where I am with, you know, like my curiosity. I am becoming a little bit more interested in Midwestern foods.
Midwestern.
Yeah.
Because you're from Detroit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I'm gearing my mind up to write a cookbook, which we've discussed a little bit. And I'm really starting to like wrap my head around what that looks like and, you know, just always making sure that whatever I produce is true to my character, my personality. And so I started doing some research about just like food. I mean, all up and through the North, the Midwest, things I never, places I never thought to think about with food. Iowa, you know, of course, you know, Wisconsin and Chicago and how we have some similar dishes. And then we, and then each of these places have their own dishes. And then some particular fast food places that are special to these regions, you know, and it's a vast amount of food.
Yeah. So it's a huge space.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot in between these coasts.
And then when you even just getting into the specific food items, you start to look at like the, you know, cultural migrations and how these foods actually got there and why they're eaten this way. You know, we have a huge Polish community in Michigan, you know, and so I grew up eating kielbasas, punchkis, pierogies, you know, like that's normal any young Black person has eaten that on a regular mm-hmm. basis. And, you know, just knowing the backstory of how these things got there is really important.
Yeah. You know, how they traveled. I mean, it's part of the diaspora completely.
That's right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What's it? Midwest is best.
That's what they say. I'll never dispute it.
There's your title. That would be really exciting. I mean, you've been behind so much content.
Yeah.
You know, you've food styled and done all these things, and now you're on in front of the camera and stuff. But for you to have your own story between yes. two book covers or whatever it might be, I feel like I'd be excited to read that.
Well, yeah. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. I think a lot of people would.
I hope so. I've been thinking a lot lately about a lot of emphasis, you know, how much emphasis or lack thereof have I been putting towards myself,
mm-hmm.
you know, as a person, as a brand, you know. I spent many years helping people
yeah.
in the industry, and I feel very fulfilled from that. But perhaps I'm ready to move on
yeah.
from that, you know.
It's like your own air mask
yeah.
kind of thing.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, because you, was it on Instagram, something recently, because you mentioned the word burnout
mm-hmm.
and sort of hearing you talk about this now.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering how you navigate that. And for someone who has been so helpful to so many people, I mean, you've mentored so many people, you've just helped so many people, you've assisted so many people, you've produced so much stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm just curious about when you, just as a human being, are facing burnout, mm-hmm. as we all do at certain points, how, like, what's your process of establishing boundaries? How does that look for you? Do you?
The truth yeah. is that I didn't really have a whole lot of boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think I was doing the kind of work that really required like specific standard set boundaries. You know, like when I'm tired, I just sit down, right? Mm-hmm. But I learned through experiencing burnout that it's a lot deeper than that, you know? One of the things that I did recently was connect with a life coach who has been instrumental in helping me unpack not just the fact that I allow myself to be burnout, but how did I get there? Because
mm-hmm.
the burnout is the final result.
Sure,
you
yeah.
know, and it's the in between.
Doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah, it doesn't happen overnight, and it's the in between that we usually ignore, or somehow it goes under the radar or over the radar, and you don't see it happening until you're like, "Oh my God, I'm spiraling!" Right?
Until you don't have a choice.
Yeah,
yeah.
And some of the things that we talked about were, my unwillingness to ask for help,
mm-hmm.
and not because I don't recognize that I need it. I've just never had it. And so asking for help is something that I have to focus on. We talked about spiritual fulfillment, like what am I doing to fill my spirit?
Mm-hmm.
I used to meditate every morning, you know, and that's one of the things that's kind of fallen off. And, you know, so that for me is a very safe space.
Mm-hmm.
It centers me, helps me get the day going. And it's something I need to get back to.
Yeah.
And so we pretty much address like mental, physical, spiritual, and mental, you know, mental headspace is always easier to lose for some reason, you know. But I think the boundaries have just really been to me, for me.
Mm-hmm.
I also established with my life coach that there's a character in me that I call Diddy.
You're pointing to yourself
yes.
right now as you're talking about it. Which
yes.
is, yeah, like
in,
to your center, to
in
your core.
My center,
yeah.
right. There are two people in there. There's Shonda,
uh-huh.
which is me.
Okay.
Because my name's LaShonda. You know, did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yes, my name
okay.
is LaShonda. So there's Shonda
uh-huh.
that's in there, and then there the other person in there is Diddy. Now, we call the person Diddy because Diddy has his whole philosophy. And, you know, this is Sean Puffy Combs.
Yes.
Right? His philosophy is can't stop, won't stop. Right? So there's a Diddy in
Got
me
it.
That can't stop, won't stop. And by the time Shonda catches up with Diddy, Diddy's already made the decision that we're going to do 22 interviews. We're going to do 3 pop-ups. And we're just going to run the world. And I'm like, you know, Shonda's like, no. We can't do that,
mm-hmm.
you know, but it's too late. The commitment's already done. So I'm trying to put them in different places in line.
Yeah.
Diddy has to come to Shonda first.
Ask for some permission.
To ask for
Check
permission.
Check the schedule.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
When you're pointing to where they exist,
mm-hmm.
Shonda's on your heart side.
Yes.
Yeah. and Diddy's on the other side.
Yes. Clearly my lung side or something, because Diddy thinks
stamina
that they're the life of the party. Yes. Yeah. So, yeah. So, you know,
so you're trying to reconcile.
Reconcile. Yeah. And they both are important, but, you know, they can't, they are not separate entities.
Yeah.
You know, we are one unit.
Yeah.
And we have to work together.
How did you find your life coach? What was that process?
Actually, she's a childhood friend.
Oh, wow.
Who I would just, you know, support her budding practice. She's based in Oakland, well, between Detroit and Oakland. And her name is Leslie J. Brown. The name of her company escapes me now because, you know, I can't remember shit. But
I'll follow up. We can put
yes.
a link.
Let's put a link for wants, her. Okay. She's amazing.
In the show notes. Yeah.
She actually, the first time I did a coaching with her was about 4 years before, so maybe 2012. We did a coaching and we did some visualization work. And I literally visualized myself at Cape Cod. And then 5 years later, ended up here in New England.
So that was, yeah, before you lived here.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. This wasn't even on the radar at all. Yeah. And so I've known her whole life, probably since she was 6 years old. And now she has this outstanding practice and does outstanding work for people. And I highly recommend her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you guys talk, like, over the phone?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you're in different places.
Yeah, we talk over the phone.
Yeah.
We try to connect, like, once a month, you know. She's amazing. And just this recent conversation we had, just how she goes about helping you to come to realizations and giving you your personal homework. She's even grown, like her style, her practice.
That's
you
cool.
know, it's amazing. She's excellent,
and it's you making time for yourself
mm-hmm.
to have this kind of moment of connection with yourself. I feel like everything goes back to you.
Yeah.
Sort of making the time for connection.
Well, if you don't, your body will do it for you. I spent all of May I've never had sciatica before, but I was pretty much taken down by sciatica. It wasn't brought on by anything. I didn't fall. It was just my body, like, shutting down. And we were filming TV at the time. And
so you're standing.
Yeah. And when they say cut, I would literally have to lay on the floor.
Wow.
Yeah. And then I would go to the chiropractor and acupuncture. I was seeing somebody 4 times a week.
Wow.
Just trying to get my body back in sync. And I think it was at that moment, like those weeks, I was like, I have to stop.
Yeah. And you did?
I did. I pulled all programming for She Chef. I haven't done any interviews. I mean, it was cool because all the work that I had actually done last year was surfacing for the first half of this year. And so during the time where I was doing absolutely nothing, I was still, you know, seeing the fruits of the labor.
Well, you planted seeds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was great, you know. But I think all of us have a fear of, like, losing our relevance in the industry. And especially, you know, like, I'm 42 years old. I've invested a lot of time. And the last thing I need is to get to a point where I have to, like, start over, you know. And I'm a little isolated here, you know, in the Northeast. Like, I'm not connected to my New York community like I used to be. So it takes more work for me to stay in the public eye, you know. And also, you know, some people have opinions about TV chefs, you know, like whether they can really cook or not. And
what do you say to them?
I mean, they're not all the way wrong. Not all the way wrong, you know. But, you know, it's not always right either.
Yeah.
You know, I think it kind of depends on, you know, what you're talking about. Like, do you have to be a great cook to be on Guy's Grocery Games? I don't know. It doesn't seem like it. It's in a grocery store. But, you know, you could be a novice or enjoy it, you know. So, you know, there's also been that part of me, like, I don't want to lose my voice on the plate, you know. I've been cooking America's Test Kitchen's food for 3 years now, and that's unusual for me, you know. I spent maybe 4 or 5 years doing pop-ups between New York and Detroit when pop-ups weren't even popular, and now everybody's popping up, you know. So it's like I'm either too far ahead of the game or I'm too far behind the game.
Yeah.
That's like I have late bloomer syndrome.
Yeah. Or, I mean, maybe you're where you're supposed to be, but everyone else is somewhere else.
Maybe, or, perhaps, yeah. You know, and I'm always open to that. Like, I've always been the kind of person to create my own lane.
Yeah.
You know? I never worried about keeping up with the Joneses.
Yeah. So how are you feeling now, kind of taking a little step back and having certain fears about staying relevant, that kind of stuff, staying in it, you know? You're right now.
I'm scared.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm scared about it.
Yeah. I think that's powerful to hear because so many of us see you. You're on TV. You're doing all this stuff. You are so relevant. You're getting, you know, people look up to you and all this stuff. And to know that even you feel scared.
Well, you know, I ain't going to never lie about my raw feelings, you know, because it doesn't serve anybody to do that.
Yeah.
And everybody's, everybody's scared.
Yeah.
You know.
We're all scared.
Everyone.
Yeah.
You don't know. You never know what will happen. But I do have enough faith in myself to know that as long as I'm creating content that is, like, meaningful for someone, it all counts.
Yeah,
you know, it all counts. I mean, I had a friend tell me the other day, like, you're still on TV. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess that there's that. You know, like, no matter what, you're still on TV. And you're on an Emmy Award-winning show, you know. That's great.
Yeah.
I don't take it for granted, but I'm also kind of like, what does that have to do with me?
It's really interesting to think about because I think so many people hold certain things in such high regard and it feels so important. But then it's also like, you're a human being at the end of the day. Like they say cut and you're laying on the floor.
Yes.
You know, it's like, what's the cost for your day-to-day life? And I was thinking a lot about something you said to me. I got to interview you for Food and Wine. Mm-hmm. And I love talking to you for that piece. And I wrote down something you said because I asked you, when I see you on TV and this stuff, to me, it just seems so like calm and cool. I don't know if it actually feels that way, but that's what I see. And I asked you about kind of staying sort of even keeled in a world that is not. And you said that you're a cancer survivor, which you've talked about mm-hmm. before. Once I came to the brink of death and went through chemo, I understood that nothing matters more than having a full life. And I've just thought about that line a lot, and I wanted to ask you what a full life means to you. What does that look like, having one?
You know, I think from the time that we interviewed for Food and Wine to now, that has changed.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think a full life now is doing what I want to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and probably inclusive of all the things that I was thinking when I said it at that time. But even more so now, I'm like, it's great to do work to elevate a brand or, you know, a group of people, especially if it's done with integrity. But it's nothing like being yourself, doing mm-hmm. you. It's nothing like it. Mm-hmm. You know, you only get one lifetime to do that.
Yeah.
You know, perhaps.
When perhaps. When do you feel most that, like most you? When do you feel most in touch with yourself?
Probably oh, that's a good question. When do I most feel like myself? Probably when I'm home.
Yeah.
You know, like my home is pretty much a full representation of, you know, who I am. So I feel very comfortable here. I feel comfortable in learning settings, mm-hmm. you know.
Like when you're the student?
Yeah.
Or when you're the teacher?
When I'm
teach a lot.
When I'm the student. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love learning things. It makes me feel very grounded, mm-hmm. you know, because you can get caught up and feel like you know a lot.
Sure.
You
yeah.
know.
It's very humbling to not be an expert.
Very humbling. Yeah. You know, and I have zero desire to always be the expert.
Yeah.
You know, I do enjoy a good amount of time of being the student. So, like, you know, I went to James Beard Foundation boot camp,
mm-hmm.
and it was a sick amount of learning in just a short amount of time. But it felt great, you know, to be learning from other peers and coming to new realizations together, like, those spaces make me feel very at home and very comfortable and very centered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool. And great that you're able to take that time to do that.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
You got to, I mean, you just have to find the time.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm curious with your, because you did a lot of stuff behind the kind of scenes and food styling and all mm-hmm. this stuff before you were ever on camera. But before all of that, mm-hmm. you were a social worker,
yes.
right? What do you take from that part of your professional life with you now? Do you find like strings that tie those together?
That was pretty much how She Chef was even founded, you know,
like your form of social work.
So there's always ties. And I think being a social worker is also so much more than a chosen career field. It is also a personality type.
Mm.
And I know for sure that I am that personality type. I mean, as long as I can remember being aware of how to help people or provide resource for people, I've been doing it my whole life. My mother used to make me volunteer for like United Way summer camps. Mm-hmm. So I was always like a volunteer camp buddy, you know, and as I got older, counselor, you know, so I've always been in positions of, you know, like helping people. And it just kind of is who I am. So there's no part of my life that doesn't involve that. Even though I've kind of like put She Chef down for a nap, there are still people who call and email me like, could you introduce me to this person?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy to do it, you know, like,
and that's
I love
the
that
work. You know, even if like the flag isn't waving outside right now, like you're still doing it.
Yeah. I mean, and the fact that people even still consider me a connector, you know, a resource, it's an honor, you know. That means that even, you know, I'm not out of sight, out of mind.
No,
you know,
not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. I feel like there's an interesting thread between, I feel like off the top of my head, I can think of a few other women who are pretty prominent in food and who are running their own restaurants and stuff and, you know, doing all these things.
Yeah.
Who used to be social workers.
Mm-hmm.
Karen.
Yeah.
Mashama.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a few, I feel like there's a something there. I don't know exactly what, but
it's the willingness to help people and not kill them. That's what it is.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then for all of you to be helpers and now to be in a position of kind of learning to also receive help and ask for it.
I think Mashama and Karen are way better at asking for help than I am, you know, because they have restaurants, you know. Like, you have to really be able to do that. And I don't know if that's, you know, like, I don't know if that means I'm not, I don't have enough humility in my soul or, you know, because I'm an only child and that just, I've always just done things independently. I don't know what that is, you know, but it's not good. I know that, you know, asking for help is important.
Yeah, it's super important. And I feel like, I mean, I can't speak for anyone else, but I feel like on behalf of all the people you've helped, I think we're all in support of you taking any time or support or anything like that.
Well, the good thing about that is that I would do it anyway. You know, I've never looked for permission other than from myself, which is also kind of the problem.
Because
I'm like, you're only racing yourself, Elle. You're only
Shonda and Diddy,
you know, these goons, you know. So the only people you're racing. And so I'm just like, I don't mind taking a little time out and working on myself and figuring out. Because what I am stubborn enough to never do anything I don't want to do.
Mm.
I just won't do it.
What sign are you?
I'm Sagittarius.
Oh, you and my mom.
Yeah. I loved her immediately.
Yeah. What do you do for fun? I think it's a question I've been wanting to ask more people. I think I'm figuring that out for myself is why I'm asking.
What do I do for fun? Travel.
Mm-hmm.
Travel's fun. Even when it's work related, it's a lot of fun. Attempting to read books.
Mm-hmm.
I have lots of books I'm only on chapter 2 of.
Yeah.
Maybe hearing people speak, you know, like anytime someone's coming to talk about politics or just like a good sit-down listen moment.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
It's really a lot of fun for
me. Yeah. I feel like I like that too. And to me, it's like you have to be present to really listen. So
yeah, you do have to disconnect quite a bit. You know, all the things. You're right. I think the common denominator for all those things is that at some point you have to be present.
Yeah.
And I like being present.
Yeah.
And when I'm not doing it, I miss it.
Yeah.
I just get too engrossed in all the other things to remember that I miss it, but
That's
I do.
Easy to do.
Yeah.
In the age of the iPhone, especially.
I know.
Well, I appreciate you being present with me. That's really
of course.
That's a treat.
Yeah. Of course.
And I just thank you for everything you've done, and I'm glad you're taking some time.
Thank
I think it's
you.
Important to share that message too.
I am
sure.
taking the time, and yeah. you know, come what may, you know, the universe hasn't failed me yet, so I'm not expecting anything different this go round.
Yeah.
However, when I do come out of the gates, watch me. Just keep your eyes open. It's going to be a surprise. To even me.
To even you.
Yep.
I'm just, is it like Shonda who's running out first or Diddy? Or they're holding hands.
I think they're holding hands. Yeah. They're one. Diddy is like pulling back. You know, like little kids when they don't want to leave and uh-huh. they're holding their parents' hand and they're just short of having like, when they stiffen up like a board, that's what Diddy's doing
yeah.
right now. But we're going to get Diddy
well,
together.
I look forward to it.
Yeah.
Can I ask you one last just fun question
yes.
that I love to ask everyone?
Yes.
When you were a little kid, what was your favorite thing to eat?
Mud pies. Like literal mud pies, and be completely disgusted with myself. But you're playing chef, so you got to eat the pie.
Uh-huh.
And also cornbread and black-eyed peas.
Okay. And these are very specific personal things. So how were those prepared in your family?
Oh, and
or was it
smothered
someone else?
Squash. My grandmother would make
okay.
them. She would just like put on a pot of black eyed peas with some good smoked turkey legs and
uh-huh.
like the whole leg and just like let it cook down to the meat's falling off the bone and the beans are like soft and the skins are coming off.
Yeah, that sounds
And she'd make
amazing.
A nice hot pan of cornbread mm-hmm. and we would just like break it up into black eyed peas and like.
Was her cornbread sweet or no?
Her
I know
cornbread
that's a
was
big,
sweet.
Okay.
It was sweet. Yeah. That was my favorite thing. Like, it could be 90 degrees outside, but I would want a hot bowl
yeah.
of black-eyed peas.
And smothered
oh,
squash?
Summer squash, yes.
Summer squash.
She would just dice it up with some onions,
uh-huh.
put it in the cast iron, cover it. When it was soft, we
like
would
let
eat
it go
it.
Forever.
Just, yep.
Yeah. That sounds so good.
Oh, man. I would eat it out of the pot, like out of the skillet. And she'd be like, stop. It's not going to be any left. Yeah. I would drive my grandmother nuts in the kitchen, just
yeah.
eating as she would cook it. And she'd be like, this is dinner.
Is that how you learn?
Mm-hmm.
Being with her. Yeah. Do you still
yeah.
make, will you make those foods now?
Oh,
like
yeah.
for yourself? Yeah.
I do. I love
yeah.
those foods
yeah.
very much. I actually just submitted to, there's a cookbook coming from TK Company, I'll tell you. I'm going to have to look it up in my
That's
phone.
That's fine.
But I want to say it's BuzzFeed.
Okay.
There we go.
Oh, yes.
Yes. So BuzzFeed has a cookbook
uh-huh.
coming out for queer children
yes.
and families.
Uh-huh.
So I submitted one of my grandmother's recipes
awesome.
To that book. I'm not going to tell you which one, so you have to buy it and figure it out.
You've done this before.
And also, most recently, to a resistance in baking cookbook,
mm-hmm.
which
the
I...
Rage Baking.
Rage Baking
yes.
with Catherine.
Yes.
She was my intern... supervisor when I interned at the Food Network
wow.
back in the day.
No
yeah,
way.
Yeah.
Very cool.
It's very cool. So there's another one of my grandmother's recipes
okay.
in that book. So which is interesting because I've actually had to do a lot of work to like revise these recipes
yeah.
because, you know, pinch of this, pinch
yeah.
of that, you know, there's no way to publish
yeah.
that, you know.
Yeah.
So it was fun having family members taste and test things to see if, you know, the flavor profile was on point. And
do you feel like it is?
Oh, yeah.
It's hard to do.
It is very
yeah.
hard to do.
Yeah.
It's very hard to scale, especially, you know, something that might only have been made for two, maybe scaling it for six or
mm-hmm.
more. And then also, you know, I have my grandmother's potato salad on the menu at the,
yes.
the Wing.
I saw that. That is
here
so
in Boston.
Cool.
Yeah.
yeah. So what's, how do you make her potato salad?
Well, some of the things that the average person wouldn't do is,
uh-huh.
like, most people chop up their onions to go in. She would grate the onion to get more fine pieces
uh-huh.
and also to get the juice.
Yeah, sort of like puree a little
yeah,
bit. Yeah.
yeah. And she uses paprika, not smoked, sweet. And what else is different?
Eggs in it?
Yes, there
yes.
are eggs in it and sweet relish.
Uh-huh. Sounds delicious.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Delicious. Her recipe calls for yellow food coloring. I was like, well, I'm not going to freak the people out. If no one really cares, it's fine. So I use a little mustard to kind of give it that, a nice tint.
Yeah.
But that was a fun recipe to work on because you would think it's potato salad. How hard can it be? It was really one of the most difficult ones to do.
Potato salad is very, very personal.
It is very, very important. Personal. Yeah.
So cool that you're getting to share your family's recipes in all these different places.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. And you know, if a restaurant is ever in my future, it'll probably be a combination of some of these Midwest classic recipes and the recipes that I grew up on.
Yeah.
If a restaurant's to come.
I'd eat there. I'd read the book. I'd listen to the podcast. All the stuff.
Oh, man. You're a ride or die. Very cool. That's why we're friends.
Well, thanks for doing this. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Like pancakes, most products don't come out perfect the first time. Each time OXO makes a new product, they test exhaustively to ensure that it works in different scenarios and even beyond normal consumer use. They call this cycle testing. Get this, for the button on the new pop containers, they tested it over 100,000 times by creating a mechanism that pushed the button over and over. And that's for a button on a container that already existed. Even after a product is out in the world, OXO never stops thinking about it and improving on it. For more about OXO and their products, head to OXO.com. That's OXO.com. It is now time to answer listeners' questions about cooking. I have Grace, my wife, sitting right next to me, who's going to be the voice of the listeners and ask today's questions.
All right, JT, your first question comes from Soap Eater, who asks, what are your top three grocery shopping tips?
So my first tip is to eat before you go. I try to do that so I don't end up with like a bunch of random things in my cart that I'm never going to use because that tends to happen when I'm a little bit hungry or what's that term? Hangry. My second tip is to organize your grocery list by section. So put all the produce in one part of your list, the dairy in another, household supplies like tinfoil in another, you know, paper towels, whatever. If you really know your store and you really think ahead, you can order this list in the order you go through the store so you don't have to backtrack. But that's like super intense 2.0. My third tip is if you have some time to explore and a little bit of money to spare, buy something you haven't tried before. It's one of the best ways to get to know new ingredients and new flavors. So yeah, top three grocery shopping tips.
Your next question comes from Chef Rahana Bissaret Martinez, who asks, what is your approach for planning this week's meals?
So I don't know that I have a single approach. It's usually determined by factors like whether or not I have recipes to test, maybe if we're having someone over for lunch or dinner. I plan around those types of things, and I always make sure to make more than enough so we can have leftovers to fold into future meals. I actually wrote a whole book about this called Now and Again. Like last night, I cooked some vegetables for us to have with turkey burgers. But, you know, I used some of those vegetables in my breakfast this morning. I'm really excited to have a leftover turkey burger for lunch today on some toast with mayonnaise and lots of pickles. So I plan for just a couple of meals at a time, but I know those couple of meals will turn into more meals. I get a bit stressed planning for more than two or three dinners at a time, but I also have a lot of flexibility on my side, and I'm someone who gets to grocery shop as often as I want to, and I actually really enjoy doing that. So I don't do too much planning ahead of time, but I love taking one meal, turning it into another.
All right, your next question comes from Laura B. 1226, who asks, what is your favorite simple meal? Like when you have 20 minutes, what do you put on the table?
Okay, a few favorites jump to mind. One is sautéed like kale or any type of green or even just chopped up zucchini with garlic. And then I'll throw some eggs and cheese into that and make kind of like a cheesy veggie scramble. We'll have that with toast, maybe toasted English muffins, call it a day. That's perfect. Another thing that we often do when we don't have much time and we're both really hungry, it's just like a quick kind of veggie stir fry. Maybe sometimes we'll throw tofu or chicken into it. But in general, if I just have 20 minutes to make a meal, that usually means I'm using stuff up in the fridge rather than making a meal I've planned for. So it's usually leftovers turned into something new. Like maybe if we have leftover roast turkey, I'll slice it and make us turkey Reubens, or maybe leftover black beans, we'll have black bean tacos, something like that. So taking something that's already there, turning it into something new. It's kind of a theme today. Those are all the questions. Thank you, Grace, so much.
Anytime.
And if you have a question for me, just DM me on Instagram at Tertian or drop an email to keepcalmandcookonpodcast@gmail.com. And before I say goodbye this week, a quick shout out to Future Chefs, an organization that Elle has put on my radar, and I am so glad to put on yours. Future Chefs prepares teens for successful life and work after high school. The Future Chefs teens work hard in the kitchen, and they use their training as a foundation for a broad range of academic and professional careers. Future Chefs' conviction is that the hard and soft skills learned in the kitchen can be applied meaningfully in all avenues of a fulfilling life. To learn more about Future Chefs, head to futurechefs.net. The link is also in the show notes, along with the link to Elle's life coach and friend, Leslie Brown. Thanks for tuning into this episode of Keep Calm and Cook On. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcast. And if you have a few extra seconds, please rate and review the show. It really makes a difference to help others find it. And let someone know about it. Post about it on social media, text a friend about the show, email your family. It all adds up. Keep Calm and Cook On is produced and hosted by me, Julia Tertian, and engineered by David Tatasciore. For more about David, head over to davetat.com. And for more about me and my work and my cookbooks, head over to juliatertian.com. I'm on Instagram and Twitter at Tertian. Thanks again for listening. This episode of Keep Calm and Cook On is presented by OXO. OXO makes some of the most thoughtfully engineered tools around. To find out more about OXO, head over to OXO.com. That's OXO.com.